Welcome everyone to the Verifiable Credentials API work item call. This is August 16th, 2022. Today on our agenda, is just a review, introductions, relevant community updates, status of the Exchange Discovery PR. So Mike Varley heads up that we're going to ask you to give us an update there. How are client features requested? So a question about inter-protocol requests for information, this interact thing and the back and forth associated with it. A discussion around terminology, so renaming the app terminology to maybe coordinator. It looks like there's a slight lean in that direction in the issue, and then other issues as time permits. Are there any other updates or changes to the agenda today? The other question we might want to explore is we've heard from at least three people that have said that they want to be on these calls, but it's at a bad time for them. So there's a question around asking asking the community group if people would prefer a different time. We could maybe put that out to the list as well. So I'll put that on the agenda. I think we all know each other here, so we can skip introductions and reintroductions and go to relevant community updates. Any relevant community updates other than the standard rebooting is coming up, please register. W3C TPAC is coming up, please register. And IIW is coming up in November. And register for that as well. Anything else that folks would like to announce? Okay, that will do it for... there's one more thing. I think at the end last week. And that is, I'd see Dimitri, I'll get to you in a second. Chappie.io, so Chappie now has the ability to use different issuer back ends that are powered by the VC API. VC issuer API. So I'll put that in the chat channel. And the other interesting piece of news is that, getting another link, we have another implementer of the VC issuer API. We have added MavenNet as an implementer of the VC issuer and the verifier API. And that brings us up to five active implementers that are implementing against the API.
Does that list include DCCI, Curiosity?
Does not, but we would love to have DCC in that list.
Yeah, please add one of the early implementers too.
So Dimitri, you put yourself on the queue, and I do have a question for you on getting you in that list. But go ahead.
Right. The other announcement is the day before IIW, the next Jobs for the Future Interop Fest is going to be happening. So this is PlugFest 2, testing specifically issuing protocols. So we're looking for either vendors that have implemented issuers or vendors that have implemented credential wallets or both. So there's a sign up form that you should sign up and point out which one you're implementing and which protocol you aim to use. So VC API is one of the three protocols that that we're expecting people to implement that we want to be testing against. So it's a reminder for everybody, if you haven't considered participating in JFF Blogfest, do consider. If you haven't filled out the registration form, do fill it out. And that's it.
Awesome. Thank you, Dmitry. Yes, a super important Plugfest for this year. It's the, well, I think one of the most important Plugfests that's going on over the next year. Let me share a window here. Just wanted to go back and show folks around Issuer backend. So in order to support the JFF Plugfest, at least through the Chappie interface, there's now this little gear icon here in the top right. And you can select the issuers. Right now, it's only DigitalBazaar's VCJS front-end issuance thing that happens there. So, for example, you can click on an alumni credential and click Generate Verifiable Credential. And the proof here is generated by the web page through the VCJS application. But the very next set of features that we're going to be releasing are the issuer backends. So we will then allow selection of different issuer backends that the credential can be issued through. And then you can store that in the wallet. There are also plans to do a DIDAuth flow, a decentralized identifier flow through this. Yes, Dmitry, go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, that's really exciting. I really like this UI. And this is going to be useful in the Plugfest as well. My question is, of course, authentication. Do you expect that Chappie IO, when handing off the request to a particular issuer, to have some sort of token authentication header, or are we expecting it to be unlocked?
For DID authentication, okay, there are a couple of answers there, right? So for DID authentication, SVP.
API authorization.
API authorization right now in the test suite is either completely open. So you do zero authorization. You can use OAuth2, or you can use ZCAPs. The test suite supports all three mechanisms today.
Awesome. Thank you.
So just to kind of drill into your question a bit more, this is the latest VC API issuer test suite run. It runs every Sunday against everyone's live implementations. As we can see here, API catalogs and implementer, Danube Tech, DigitalBazaar, MavenNet, and SecureKey. And as you can see, we're not all passing the tests. DigitalBazaar is embarrassingly the worst compliant one on here, but that's why we have test suites. From what I remember, API Catalog uses OAuth2. DigitalBazaar uses OAuth2. Danube Tech, I believe you're open right now. Marcus, MavenNet is OAuth2, and I forget SecureKey. Mike, I don't know if you remember.
We're either wide open or bearer token that is published on our GitHub page, okay. So there's no security on the API.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I totally misspoke. DigitalBazaar ZCAPs, so we support both OAuth2 and ZCAPs. Clearly, we're not expecting anybody else to support ZCAPs, but we wanted to make sure that people knew that we have a delegated authorization based mechanism that does work against the API, and we have implemented for that. So all three forms, Dmitry, was that the question you were asking?
Yes, I was hoping, that at least OAuth2 is supported, and it sounds like it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. We're certainly, I think, we'll get knocked if we don't support, you know, at least OAuth2 and then multiple forms. So yeah, I think we're good there. The on the issuer side, on the Chappie side, don't worry. It's going to be there. If it's not there, it's going to be there, right? In very short order. And this is already a demonstration that we already have infrastructure that supports all three, right?
Awesome.
Okay. All right. So that's that. And then the addition of MavenNet was a happy thing this week. The other thing about did authentication PR has been merged at this point. Mike Varley, we addressed a number of your concerns there around, you know, should this be an array of objects or not? And Dimitri, your concerns around should we have this be an object or not? And so for both accepted methods and accepted crypto suites, it is an array of objects where each object at a minimum specifies, like for DID methods, the method name, and for crypto suites, the crypto suite name. And that's it. Those were the changes that we talked about last week, and those have been applied. And things are there. And so then the question becomes, you know, in JFF, are we expecting people to DID auth through the VC API? Are we expecting them to DID auth through Chappie? And that is probably something we should queue up for a conversation in, the VC EDU call. I don't know. Carrie, Dimitri, are y'all planning on broaching that topic at some point in the future?
Oh, looks like Carrie's in the queue. Yep.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Dimitri, correct me if I'm answering wrong, but, we're not requiring a specific type of DID auth, only that it happens.
Okay. Got it.
And so we're expecting that the choice of protocol will dictate the DID auth. Meaning, okay, if this issue or this wallet only works with VC API, we expect DID auth through that. If it supports Chappie, we expect DID auth through Chappie, etc.
Got it. Okay. So I think what we may plan to do is try to provide it through Chappie, through the Chappie Playground, and through a VC API endpoint as well that does DID auth through the VC API. In both mechanisms, we'll use exactly the protocol defined in this VP request spec. Hopefully it's detailed enough at this point that people can implement to it. Okay. Any other questions, comments, concerns before we move into the rest of the agenda? All right. Thanks all. Next up, status of exchange discovery PR. Mike, this was, I think, adopted for merge, meaning like everyone was cool with merging it. I think we're still waiting on you to rebase. Any updates here?
No, I have to rebase.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if this is something that I can maybe do.
Like I just have to reapply the PR to the latest branch, to the main.
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, so basically you would go to, can I jump to your?
Oh, okay. It's got merge conflicts.
Yeah, it has merge conflicts. So there's just the merge conflicts need to be resolved. And I'm happy to do that the next time I'm in the spec if that would be helpful to you. I just didn't want to stomp over anything you were doing.
It would be helpful. So, thank you. I mean, anyone can do it is what I meant. Anyone who's there, in that I don't have anything else to add. I think there was still an open question as to, whether this was still desired. And it was related to the, you know, what protocols do we expect VC API to support? I think last call I was on, it was clarified that we still hope that the VC API will support many protocols, not just VPR, and it's not just a JSON LD based spec. So I understand that to be that discovery is probably still needed, but, I'd like to confirm that assumption hasn't changed. It's been a while since we've talked about this particular feature, and there's been a lot of conversations around, you know, how clients will be interacting with the interface. So if people are still comfortable with having the Exchange end, or the Discovery endpoint to support, because there are maybe multiple protocols and so on, then I will, you know, I can go ahead, or anyone can go ahead and merge it in. If things have shifted, then maybe we can talk about it. But I guess this is just a confirmation. Have things shifted? Yes or no?
Things have not shifted. No, I think we're still in the same position. So whatever you, cool. Okay. You know, what you outlined, I think is where the group still is.
And, perfect. Okay.
And I think we're just looking for this to be merged right now as a heads up. This exists. Implement it if you feel it's useful. Right.
Cool. Okay.
Okay. All right. So how about this? If it's not merged by this weekend, I will, rebase and merge it.
Sure. And I will do my best to get it done, before then.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. So,
awesome. Thank you.
We discussed this on the 2022-8-16 call, and it was decided that we will merge this PR by, the following call and the following weekend. Either like Arlie will rebase and merge, or we will do merge. Okay, all right. So that's that item. Thank you for the update. Next up, how are client features requested? So this is issue 280. And issue 280, let's see. Yeah, this is a big one. So the question is, how, if, you know, so basically there are two ways to kind of discover what a client's capable of, at least two that have been explored so far. It's the kind of OIDC, well-known, mechanism, and the, VC API kind of in protocol, mechanism. And to, summarize them bluntly, the OIDC mechanism, you know, kind of publishes all the information on the public. So the digital wallet says, I support, DidKey and DidWeb and these types of crypto suites and these types of, you know, protocols, right? And that's published in a well-known space. So that's kind of the OIDC approach. And then the, VPR approach is very much in band, which is, in band, meaning like when you're doing a presentation exchange, the verifier goes, I need to know which DID methods you support. And you get a kind of a something back to say that. And then it might say, I need to know whether or not you're two-factor authenticated right now. And that happens kind of dynamically in the protocol flow itself. And those are kind of the two approaches that have been suggested. I think this one specifically has to do with VPR and if the VPR mechanism is a useful one. And I think we're going to spend a bit of time on the call today kind of comparing and contrasting. I see Carrie and David on the queue. Carrie, is that an old queue or a new one?
Sorry, that's old to know with myself.
Okay, sorry, I didn't knock you. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, just a reminder that whatever I say probably will not be recorded.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'll try.
For some reason. Okay, no, I was just going to say that for OIDC, it's recognized that not every wallet is going to be capable of publishing its metadata. And so there's a, if you like, a default set of metadata that is being documented in the OIDC for VC specs, so that you assume that the wallet will support this set of metadata if you have no other way of finding out.
Okay. So that is just kind of like it's in the spec, and so by default, all wallets will support BIDKEY, for example. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there was a discussion at the meeting last week as to whether this the default metadata should be mandatory to implement or not. And there was some disagreement about whether it should be mandatory to implement or not. So I think it's not been finally nailed down. I think Dimitri was at the meeting. Were you, Dimitri? And maybe he can recall as much or more than I can.
I don't remember, sorry. I don't remember what the conclusion was.
Yeah, that's my position. I remember what the conclusion was. I just remember the two opposing viewpoints.
Right, right.
Okay. Okay. Was anything I said, did it mischaracterize what OIDC is doing with your additions, David? Is that a proper characterization of what OIDC is kind of doing?
Yeah, yeah. If there's a sort of well-known wallet that everybody uses, then the manufacturer would actually publish the metadata at a well-known point. So it wouldn't be the actual wallet owner, the wallet holder, but it would be the software supplier, because clearly wallet holders are not in a position usually to publish metadata. They wouldn't have a clue what it is.
Yeah. Okay. In the kind of contrast that approach with what is in VPR, for example, we can look at DID authentication. So this PR that just went into the VPR spec, as inline. So there is no, well, let's see. Let me try and find the request. I'll go to kind of the DID auth section to show how this is a bit different. And I'll go to a bit more of a complex example. So in the VPR spec, the VC API, once it, you know, you initiate an exchange, one of the queries that can come in through the protocol is, I need you to do DID authentication. And these are this is the verifier saying, these are the accepted methods. So I support BIDKEY. And I support the ECDSA 2022 crypto suite. And I want you to sign over this challenge and domain, basically. So this is an inline thing. This is not published on the web or the internet or anything like that. It happens completely inline. And the difference there, of course, is that it doesn't use well known. So, you know, Chappie and other things like that use a manifest.json file for some basic things around the wallet, but they don't express features and things that, you know, can be done. And part of the reason that at least the VPR spec takes this approach is because sometimes what is supported is entirely dependent on what the holder has done in their wallet. So for example, if they don't have a DID example DID method registered, then the wallet publishing through a static file that it supports DID example doesn't really do any good in the actual protocol itself, because the individual, the holder themselves, have no way of doing a DID example based exchange, right? So that's one of the reasons that at least the VPR spec has made this design choice, is because there's some questions about capabilities, about wallet features that can't be answered on a generalized basis. They have to be answered on a specific basis. Another example of that is like whether or not the individual has two-factored. So a wallet may say, this wallet is capable of doing two-factor authentication, but whether or not the individual has actually turned on two-factor or not is something that's very specific to the holder that's in charge of that wallet. So again, the query for that feature comes in through the verifiable presentation request. It is not something that can easily be just expressed you know, publicly in a static file. Finally, the other thing is that there may be some features that the wallet or the holder don't want to publish publicly, like the fact that you have a specific type of DID method or that you support a specific type of DID method from a holder perspective might not be something that that, you know, they want to just kind of publish. So that goes to the idea here that, you know, it's been suggested that the client should publish its capabilities to the verifier. But that leaks privacy information. That leaks information that the holder may not want to expose to the verifier. And so the verifier, at least in VPR right now, it's the verifier that says, here's how I'd like you to engage with me. And then the wallet, engagement from the holder goes, okay, of those mechanisms that the verifier supports, this is the way I want to actually engage. And that can go back and forth, back and forth. So let me stop there.
So
see if there are any questions, concerns, comments.
Well, as a comment, OpenID verification has a similar scheme, but it uses the diff PEV2 syntax. So the verifier sends the diff PEV2 request, and in that they say what format they want the VP to be in, but also what format they want the VCs to be in. So it feasible, maybe weird, but feasible for the verifier to say, I want the VC with a different format like JSON-LD proofs, but I want the VP to have JWT. That's allowed in the protocol. So that is a dynamic request coming from the verifier to the wallet. So, but it's using diff PE structures. So it's not something that the OpenID Connect protocol has specified itself. It's using diff PE. So that's an equivalent feature, I think. It may not have the full set of parameters that you have, and it may have more parameters than you have or less. You know, there is probably some intersecting set that are common.
Yeah, understood. So basically you're saying that the diff presentation exchange has that feature, but the OIDC stuff doesn't use diff presentation exchange. Is that right?
No, I was saying the opposite. I was saying OIDC does use diff presentation exchange and uses the features from diff presentation exchange. So it doesn't define them itself. So the verifier sends a presentation request to the wallet, using the OpenID Connect protocol as the transport mechanism for the DIFP presentation request, right?
Okay, got it. Mike, you're on the queue. Go ahead.
Yeah, so just to add to what David was saying, there's kind of a two-step capability. The first one is the OpenID Connect dot well-known and dynamic registration capability, which OpenID supports, where you know, the OP provider can publish its metadata, and then there can be a dynamic registration exchange where perhaps assertions are provided that a client is able, you know, is qualified to communicate. That kind of works on the OpenID Connect rails. And then inflow after an access token has been, you know, received and a client and an issuer have decided, you know, we're going to try and communicate at least, and we have a user authenticated, then, yeah, that's where and correct me if I'm wrong, David, but I think that's where the presentation exchange messages begin and the specifics of the communication can be negotiated. So it's kind of it kind of happens in two places.
Yeah. I mean, it's rather weird because in OIDC, when you're doing a verification, the relying party is actually the client, right? And the wallet is the OpenID provider, and the OAuth server. So, whereas when you're requesting a credential for issuing, the wallet is the client, and obviously the issuer is the OpenID provider and also the server. So it's a bit unusual insofar as when you were talking about the client contacting the verifier, in fact, the verifier is the client in OpenID Connect, and the wallet is the OAuth server and resource server. So the resource is the credentials. Or the VP.
I had a hard time scribing that. David, would you mind typing that in? I think I followed what you were saying, but it was a bit hard to follow. Or hard to scribe anyway.
And thanks, David. So yeah, for presentation, the model is flipped. The wallet is the provider, and the verifier is the client. On the issuance side, it's the other way around. The issuer is the provider and the wallet is the client. I think is the point there.
So for OIDC 4VCI, am I understanding this correctly? Some of the capabilities are published through a well-known file and the other capabilities can be discovered through presentation exchange for OIDC 4VCI?
It's for issuance. I believe they might be using the other diff spec credential manifest. In a limited capacity, I think
we're not now. Yeah, no, that was the case a while ago, but it was deemed to be too complex. So,
right. So
what we're doing now is defining the metadata for the issuer, which is defining things like display strings and what claims you support, etc. So it's taking bits and snippets of the manifest,
manifest,
but not the whole package.
Right.
So it does support internationalization, so you can have display strings in different locales.
Dave, I think you're on the queue next, Dave Longley.
No, I think one of the differences between the protocols that we want to highlight here is that wallet identification and client identification is a hard requirement in using OIDC for VCI, whereas it is not a hard requirement using just VC API and VPR. So it allows for more data minimization for use cases where you don't need to know what the wallet client is. That's the difference that I think is important to highlight.
Go ahead, David.
Actually, that difference is not correct, because in the pre-authorized flow, then the issuer doesn't need to know who the client is. Because the pre-authorized flow, essentially what happens is the user goes to the issuer's website or something, maybe logs in, and then is displayed a QR code, which they scan into their wallet. And then the wallet then contacts the authorization server. In that case, it's not necessary that the authorization server knows who the client is. So the client can be anonymous because they're authenticated via the pre-authorization code that was given to them. So it's like you go to the IDP's website, it gives you a secret, and then send the secret to the authorization server.
There is a redirection URL involved in that process, though, right?
Yes.
And that redirection URL identifies the client?
It may do. It doesn't actually say. In fact, we were discussing this very issue today in the NGI project, actually, as to whether we could use just a client ID of pre-authorized client and use it for everyone, or whether when the user logs in the information that is sent in that pre-authorized request through the QR code, whether it sticks some client ID in there or not. So the actual OpenID Connect for issuing protocol does not state. It does not state whether the client ID has to be present or not in the pre-authorized flow.
You're saying that an authorization code flows in some way back to the client, which implies that the authorization server, there is an authorization server that the issuer is in uses in some way, and the user must go to that authorization yeah. server, and that is where the client is authenticated. Isn't that the case?
In
the
type yes. Unifier?
Yes. Yeah. So that
yes,
that's
but the client is.
I was going to say that step's not necessary for the VC API.
Oh, okay. Well, the client is authenticated via some secret that was put into the QR code, which was transferred through the back door, if you like, to the authorization server. So the authorization server knows what the secret is because the user hasn't contacted the authorization server yet. He's done some other mechanism to talk to the issuer, and that other mechanism is not specified. That's out of band. Okay, so what we're doing is building a website where the user logs into the website of the issuer, and then he gets this QR code displayed. And that's got this secret in it, which is redirected to the wallet, and then the wallet sends the secret to the authorization server. So the first time the authorization server talks to the user, it just has this pre-authorized request.
Yes, if I can jump in there. Dave, the interesting part in that flow is that the user is authenticated, but the wallet is not identified. The wallet just passes through a random string from the QR code to the authorization server.
I don't understand how the user would. So there is the fact that there's an authorization server at all means that the issuer made some kind of choice around authorization, and the user must go somewhere to authorize the client to give it some kind of access to do something, because that's how OAuth works. And if that's the case, it seems to me like the client absolutely needs to be identified to the authorization server and to the user, and that's where they make their approval and an authorization code is generated.
Right. Now, this is another interesting point that I raised, because the issue is, who is the resource owner? Because it's the resource owner that says, yes, this client can access my resource. Now, one can view the resource owner as being the issuer, because the issuer owns the credentials and it's issuing them and it can revoke them. And therefore, one can say that the client, who is the user, comes to the authorization server with this secret and says, can I have an access token? And the authorization server can ask itself, who's the resource owner, am I going to allow this user? So there is a question about who is the resource owner, because the assumption was initially that the user was the resource owner. But I question that, because the user is not the resource owner, because the OP is. The OP is giving the credential out and can revoke it. So it must be the owner of the credential.
Right. And if that's the case, the issuer is the party that's working with the authorization server. And that means that the client must authenticate itself, and it must identify itself to that authorization server. And that's the distinction I'm drawing.
To the issuer.
That's right.
Not necessarily the authorization server. It could be a different endpoint, but in the same system.
Yeah. And my point is that in the VC API VPR approach, the issuer can be totally blind. If you so desire, they can be totally blind to the piece of software that the user is using. So they don't have to know what wallet is being used. In the OIDC flows, it's a requirement because it's part of how the security and authorization server works.
No, it doesn't have to know what the wallet is. No, it absolutely doesn't. As Dimitri said, it's the user who is authenticated, not the wallet.
But you're taken to an authorization server where you approve what wallet that is, which means that it knows what the wallet is. Just by definition.
The spec is essentially introducing another type of authorization server that doesn't need to identify the client.
If it doesn't need to be to identify the client, what does that mean about the user knowing which piece of software they're using? Is there an allow screen where they approve the piece of software that they're using?
Well, if you're using the what's called the cross-device flow, which is the QR code, then there's a QR code shown on the issuer's website, and the user takes up his smartphone, he enters the wallet of his own choosing, and says, scan this QR code in.
Sure. And then so after that, the wallet the makes making a call, right, to the authorization server?
And correct, because that QR code that's sending to the wallet contains the secret. And the wallet sends the secret to the authorization server.
So it's finding, it's using the limitation of the mobile operating system. It's turning the bug into a feature. It's using the fact that you have to select your wallet instead of the allow screen that traditional OAuth 2 does. Does that make sense? So how does the user know what software they're driving? It's because they opened it and clicked scan QR code in that software.
Right.
But
so the permission is implicit.
So once they're in their wallet, they scan the QR code with their wallet.
Yeah.
And does the wallet ever redirect them back to an authorization server where they see an allow page and approve that wallet for use at the issuer?
No.
That's very interesting. Okay. I'm very curious
what we've done
to know more about that.
Yeah, what we've done in our implementation is when the user goes to the issuer's website with his browser, okay, we're now authenticating the user there, and this is where we're doing consent. We're showing the user the credential and saying, this is your JFF Club Press credential. Do you want to put it into your wallet? And the user says yes, and then the QR code is displayed, and he puts it into his wallet.
So
that's
from that
QR code. That's completely out of band.
Right.
Yeah.
So if the user chooses any application through any means of their own and then scans that QR code, it just immediately goes to the wallet and there's no additional step.
Is that
right? Okay.
Yes. That's right. So, now, the alternative is if the user's using the browser on his smartphone, then he can't scan the QR code in.
Sure.
But then there's a URL link. And then what we're doing is specifying a deep link or a custom scheme. I think it's probably going to be OpenID colon something or something, whatever. And that will be redirected via the deep link to the wallet. So that will be configured inside the user's machine, that if it's OpenID, this wallet will answer that particular scheme.
Yeah, this is all very interesting, but we do have a queue, so I'm not going to say any more at this time.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. So I just wanted to maybe connect the dots. The pre-authorized code flow is very similar to what was being done in the Chappie flow or in the QR code flow that we demonstrated with the diff wacky. Where, the user takes action on a website and then after authenticated and so on, there's just kind of this bearer token that's passed across some mediation layer, a QR code, a Chappie message or whatnot to then engage the wallet. And the assumption is whoever picks that up and makes that call with that bearer token can get the credential. So it's very similar to what we were doing with Chappie before and then in the flow and then, yeah, and then in that regard, because it's a bearer token, whoever knows that secret can pick up the credential. There's no client authentication at that point.
Go ahead. I'm.
You're on the queue.
I'm confused because I thought there were no use of bearer tokens in the OIDC 4 VCI flow, and now I'm hearing that there are. One of the criticisms against Chappie in the VC API was that the URL passed over was a bearer token, and now I think I'm hearing that it's the same exact thing in OIDC 4 VCI, that approach. I'm confused, but
if I could just jump in, Manu, just sure. Directly respond to that. So, you're absolutely correct. The pre-authorized code flow is what we were doing, with the Chappie flow or what we also did with the wacky flow. And is subject to all the same, challenges, security, vulnerabilities or checks the, but it is an option in the OpenID Connect issuance flow. The other option is that you go through the full authorization code experience. So the OpenID Connect spec has many forks, I'm going to say, and they have invented a new fork with this pre-authorized thing that didn't exist in OAuth before. But the authorized code flow is still a valid path and one that tries to mitigate that bearer token challenge. So it is confusing. I would acknowledge that the pre-authorized code flow is very similar to what was kind of state of the art, I would say, a year and a half ago, where you take action on a web page, you get a QR code, scan it, and your wallet does the rest.
I don't know if I'm jumping queue. Should I talk?
No. You are jumping queue. David's next, and then you're after.
I got kicked off the queue, I think.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's all right. Okay. I'll just be quick. Okay. That's, thank you, Mike. That's interesting. It looks like there's potentially multiple ways that you can implement, the OIDC for VCI flow. I don't know if that's a change in what has happened, or not. And I would like to know, since David's coming up on the queue, if that choice was made to help address the problem that wallets were forced to be identified. Because that is one reason that the design was the way it was with VCAPI and VPR.
I unfortunately, I can't answer your question because I only started working on the OIDC group after all those decisions had been made. So the pre-authorized code was already there when I started work. What I would like to say, just 2 points. One is that every OAuth code uses bearer tokens because the access token is a bearer token. So you're not escaping from bearer tokens by using OAuth anyway. Even the full code flow uses bearer tokens. The second point is that the pre-authorized code has actually added multi-factor authentication as an option. So when the user scans in the QR code, if the issuer wants to require a multi-factor, it can ask for a PIN as well. It can then send a PIN to the user by SMS or something. And then the wallet, when it gets the QR code and sees that a PIN is required, will pop up a window and ask the user to enter the PIN. And they will send the PIN and the secret, which is the pre-authorized code, to the authorization server.
All right. Q is empty. Where to go from here?
It would be great if we could align the APIs.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
So I agree with David. It'd be great if we could align the APIs. I think we did diverge and we spent a lot of time talking about OpenID Connect, which is a good information share. But for this particular token, for this particular issue, how are we doing with the VPR? It seems like it's understood that it's an inline, negotiation. The verifier and or, the issuer, whoever's sending the DDoS request, is able to specify, you know, the formats that it accepts, and then inline, you know, the client can answer. So it seems like the negotiation or the discovery of capabilities is met by this VPR feature. And is that the goal? Is do others feel otherwise? Is that what you were shooting for in this issue? I just trying to pull it with 10 minutes left. I'd like to pull it back to the VCAPI instead of OpenID Connect.
Yeah, I think fundamentally the VPR spec specifically has one way of doing this. So it doesn't branch in the variety of different ways that, you know, OIDC might branch. The feature discovery mechanism is purely in channel and is purely through the delivery of verifiable credentials. So every feature is delivered as a verifiable credential. Full stop. I don't know if anyone else wants to, you know, comment to that. But that's effectively the design here, is that there's no branching. There's no it can happen this way or that way or this other way. It's purely the VC API, the VC API with VPR. All capabilities are in channel, protected, not public, and can go, you know, back and forth. So that's it. Go ahead, Mike.
So just to respond to that, so we have discovery for the API endpoints to understand what kind of, you know, protocol or exchange to do. So that's one point of discovery. The client would call that discovery endpoint, and then presumably, based off of that, understand, you know, the protocol it's going to speak. If it's a VPR, protocol, then in band, it can expect to see, this type of, I don't know if it's a negotiation, but, capabilities request or statement, which it can then meet, or not. You know, if there's particular methods or crypto suites which the wallet doesn't support, then that's an error and, you know, okay, end of story. So from my perspective, I think this sufficiently kind of answers the discovery and negotiation, you know, requirement that's going to come up in an open world. I'm wondering if others see caps.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, the gap I see is that I'm on my browser and I connect to the RP's website, okay, and it's got some login button or, you know, buy this widget or whatever it's doing, and it doesn't know whether my wallet talks OpenID for verified presentations or the VCI API. So we need something at the meta level, at the, you know, super protocol level, that allows the two parties to determine whether they can talk the same protocol. They can't, because one talks VCI API and the other talks OIDC, you know, or they both talk VCI API, or they both talk OIDC. So that, to me, is the missing gap now.
Go ahead, Dimitri.
I think what David's wish list item is, that, for example, there is a wallet selector with a protocol field. So like, if the Chappy mediator is, extended to say, all right, please forward this request. And by the way, I'd like to talk to protocols that speak VC API, or I'd like to talk to wallets that speak OpenID Connect.
Yeah, go ahead, Longley. And we've got 3 minutes left in the call. We'll have to wrap up after this comment.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we're actually 2 minutes over, because we want the W3C calls to end at 5 before. But just real quick, yes to what Dimitri said, that is one approach to the problem. The other thing I highlighted in chat is VPR lets you send multiple interact URLs, and you could send, if the server supports both OIDC for VCI and VC API, they can send two different URLs and let the client choose which one they want to use.
Yep, and that's already supported in the VPR spec. And there's discussion about supporting this stuff in the Chappy wallet selector as well. So we've got two mechanisms that could be utilized to do this in VPR and in Chappy. Okay, that's the call for today. I'll try to get these minutes out. I've been bad about minutes for the past 3 weeks, so I'll try to get all of this published in hopefully today. Thank you, everyone, for the lively call. I think Mike said it best. I don't know if anyone feels that, you know, there's anything more to say about how feature detection works in VPR, at least. There's just one way that it works. The end. Okay, so next week, Do we want to talk about the test suites and testing? We said we were going to do that, but I'm at a bit of a loss as to how to have that conversation other than just going through, you know, the test suites for the VC API stuff. Any thoughts or preferences there, or do we just want to do it more issue processing? All right. I'll send that question to the list, and or just make a judgment call. All right. Thanks everyone for the call today. We'll see y'all, next week.